Let's get started. We're in chapter 8 of Matthew. And you know, we've just finished up the Sermon on the Mount, which was awe-inspiring, awesome. How can I go on and on about how great that Sermon on the Mount was? And we're going to get more of that, obviously, as we go through Luke and Mark and that type of thing. But now we have, I want to introduce you to another thing in Matthew. Matthew, we discussed, is talking to a Jewish audience. So he's talking to an audience of Jews and who would understand the rituals and those type of things. Unlike Mark and Luke, he doesn't necessarily go chronologically. So he doesn't come off the mount and then say, you know, he does say he comes down from the mountain and the multitudes followed him. But then you'll notice that he didn't come down and all of a sudden he healed Peter's mother. He, you know, talked to the discipleship. He cast out demons. He did all these miraculous works. They're not necessarily in chronological order because they're not when you go over to Mark and to Luke. But what Matthew is trying to do is do his descriptions topically. So he's put all the miracles into this section. Isn't that kind of neat? So I just wanted to let you be aware of that before we got into it. And when he had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, a leper came up to him and bowed down to him. I want you, he bowed down to him, saying, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Now, how outrageous is the fact that a leper came up to Jesus? I mean, you may not think that this is a big deal, but if you start getting a little ulceration on your finger or someplace and you're a leper, you're not allowed to be around anybody else. You have to stay 6 feet away, and if the wind is blowing, you have to stay 150 feet away if the wind is blowing towards them. You can't be in their vicinity. As you walk, you have to tear your clothes, and you have to look bad so that people won't accidentally walk up and go, "How you doing?" And say, "Fine." You know, we'll talk about that. But nobody would touch him. He has to, as he walks around and someone comes close to him, he has to cry out, "Unclean, unclean, unclean." So how is this guy? I mean, you've been to the Titans and that kind of stuff, right? You've got a crowd. You've got 30,000 people out there all listening to Jesus, just like Billy Graham came to the stadium. And then all of a sudden, he comes down off the stage, and there's going to be people everywhere. And this leper is able to walk through this crowd and get up to the front of Jesus. I'm sure it was probably parting like the Red Sea. People were like, "Oh, look, it's a leper. Let's all make room so that we don't touch him accidentally." And then he says, he bowed down, so he's worshiping Jesus. He is showing, and he says, "Lord." Now, Lord in the Jewish sense, we're saying Lord, and we say Jesus is Lord all the time. But they never said Yahweh. Remember, you wouldn't write it out, you wouldn't say it, you would put the Y and then dot, dot, you know. You wouldn't, it was too holy of a name to say. They would substitute Lord. So he's basically saying God. He's saying to Jesus, "I recognize you as God." He bows down to him and he worships him right there. Now, in Mark's version of this, it says Jesus looked on him with compassion. It doesn't say that here. But can you imagine? Jesus is looking this guy in the eye who hasn't been noticed in a long time, hasn't been touched in years probably, because other than by another leper, not allowed to do that. And Jesus reaches out to him in that 6 foot span with compassion and gives him the one thing he really needs, which is to be touched. He's giving a miracle to this man, not just in the fact that he cleanses him of leprosy, which, quite frankly, you couldn't do if you were a priest. You couldn't do if you're just a regular person, but you were ceremoniously unclean at that point. You couldn't worship. You couldn't go into the temple. And what does Jesus tell him to do right after this? And he stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I'm willing, be cleansed." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, "See that you tell no one, but go show yourself to the priest and present the offering that Moses commanded for the testimony to them." And when he, okay, and then that's where it stops. A couple of things in this. Y'all got questions or comments? I know I'm going too fast. We are not going to finish 8. I had intended that we would. It's too late to start, so we'll probably do this next week. Questions or comments right now?
He's obviously a man of faith.
Obviously.
He's got faith in God and placed faith in him to believe in this, who this is.
Right. Yeah.
just like the centurion that's coming up also.
Right.
All people of faith. They're believers.
And they're believers in someone who's speaking a radical faith, not a faith that you would have grown up. If someone came into here and spoke a radical faith to us, would we believe it or go with the belief that we've always had? It was obvious that Jesus was who he said he was because of the authority that he spoke, like we talked about last week. He didn't speak like, you know, Rabbi so-and-so says something. He said, I say this. He spoke with the authority of God. So he wasn't saying, Rabbi so-and-so says this, and another rabbi says this, or like I do. The commentators think that's how I teach, preach, whatever. Other more learned men before me have said this, and that's what I impart to you guys, not Larry as the authority of God brings down the word. I don't, you know, other than what it says right here.
And the fact too that he's using still thinking of Moses' law, he wants him to go back to the rabbis because that was in the Old Testament, I think Deuteronomy.
Leviticus 14.
Okay, Leviticus 14.
Look it up.
And so that was part of it that he had to reckon that the rabbis got to give him an order of being clean to the public, right?
Exactly. He can't. Jesus didn't just want to cleanse him of leprosy. He wanted to change this man's life.
Right.
By taking away the leprosy, he gave him back his reputation. Because if you're a leper, you've obviously done something to sin against God. So you're paying for that. So you deserve what you got. Let me just read this because I wasn't going to, but I'm just going to be going to anyway. Leprosy might begin with the loss of all sensation in some part of the body. The nerve trunks are affected. The muscles waste away. The tendons contract until the hands are like claws. There follows ulcerations of the hands and feet. Then comes the progressive loss of fingers and toes until in the end the whole hand or the whole foot may drop off. The duration of that kind of leprosy is anything from 20 to 30 years. It is a kind of terrible progressive death in which a man dies by inches. What is this a symbol that Jesus is trying to teach us? Sin. This is what sin does to your life. It's not major. I just did a little bit. It's not a big deal. I just a little sin over here, and I can live with that. And it eats away your life. And it eats away your strength. And it eats away your reputation. And it eats just a little. I'm not doing a whole lot. And you die by inches. You die in the face of God by inches. And Jesus has come to say, I want to make you clean. I want to take that sin away from you. I want to give you a new life. I want to help you live the life that you don't think that you can. And so this is, and he reaches out and touches this man, makes him clean. And I know, I always say there's going to be this time when we come into heaven and I'm going to ask the questions that can't be answered. I want to go back to the time when this guy shows up in the priest's office and goes, hey, I've been cured of leprosy. I need to get an offering. And they go, just like you. Is it in Leviticus? Is it in Numbers? They're looking for what he had to do. Just so you know, he had to give two, I think I wrote it down. Maybe not. Anyway, he had to do
two birds,
and then eventually he had to do two lambs, two male lambs, one ewe lamb, and then something else and some oil and some whatever. And if you were poor, then you just did one lamb.
Cedar, wood, and hyacinth.
There you go. That's what it was. Cedar, wood, and hyacinth. But they're going to have to look this stuff up because not every day somebody shows up and says, hey, been cured of leprosy. And Jesus is telling him not to tell him. Why is he telling him, and he tells others at this particular early part of this ministry, don't tell anybody. Go and get clean because you can't live your life unless the priests say that you can. Unless they proclaim you clean, you can't move on with your life and get your house back and your family back and be a normal person. So he wants to get all that straightened out, but he tells him not to tell everybody. And of course he does. In Mark, I think it's in Mark. In Mark 1:44 and 45, it says, Mark tells us that the leper did not obey Jesus and instead he went out and began to proclaim it freely. But why does Jesus not want everybody to know?
Certainly. It's about time. It's not time for him to.
Could they not believe him? Because they heard about this Jesus guy. Like, oh, so now you're telling us a story. We've heard about that Jesus guy and his miracles. I mean, could it turn against him if he mentions the name of Jesus?
It could, because number one, if people are coming to Jesus just to watch him do miracles, then it becomes like a sideshow.
Yeah.
It becomes like a magician's sideshow.
Yeah.
Pull out your magic power.
Actually teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so he's teaching, doing signs, doing wonders. He's healing because he cares for the people. He has a heart for them and doesn't want to see them living just like us. He came to take our infirmities, to take the sin away from our lives, and to bear it for himself so that we could live more fully. He's doing the same thing for us that he's doing for these people here. He's wanting them to have a good life, yet at the same time, it's not time. And I know you're going to love this. I wrote this down just for you.
Okay.
See that you tell no one. Jesus often commanded people to be quiet about their healing or some miraculous work that he had done to them. He did this because he wanted to keep down the excitement of the crowds until the proper time for his formal revelation to Israel, which was an exact date as prophesied in Daniel 9. I knew it.
Moses says he didn't want to stir up the popular but mistaken expectations that a Messiah was going to come and arise as king that he was delivering from the Romans.
Exactly. So, that was another political. Because they had the expectation that if he was the Messiah, then he's going to overthrow the Romans.
Yeah.
He's going to have this physical kingdom, not a spiritual kingdom. And what we saw on the Sermon on the Mount was all spiritual. This is how you're going to live. This is how different your life is going to be under my kingdom, in my kingdom. And it's going to be a spiritual kingdom, not a physical kingdom. And they did understand, but they didn't understand. Just like we understand. What's more important to us? Where am I going to sleep tonight? How good's the warm shower going to be? What affects me physically now, not sometime way off pie in the sky in the kingdom of God later on, and the old by and by. Right?
See, one thing I've thought of here too, Larry, is that he's not like a lot of people probably were then and would be now, just running up and saying, heal me,
right.
I've got this or I've got that, heal me. It's still back, like with the Sermon on the Mount, he's got faith, but he is saying, if it's your will,
mm-hmm.
you can heal me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your will be done, but I've got the faith and I know that if it's your will, you can do it.
Right.
Yeah. So his heart was right.
His heart was right. He's being healed, I would say almost by himself, but he's being healed because he knows that. But then I told Lisa, I've got to say a praise this morning. Lisa this morning was laying in bed having her coffee, and she goes, I said something, I'm going back upstairs to study more, and she said, well, I've got to read my chapter. Oh! I mean, it was one of those, oh my God, she's going to read her chapter. Because I always just go, it's one chapter, it's not a big deal. Well, I like to hear it when you explain it. It's like, yeah, but I'm going to explain a lot more than you get just by reading it, hopefully. So just read it, and that way you're kind of on the right page. It was a miraculous thing this morning. I'll just say, it was miraculous. But then when we're driving over, I said, what about Paul? Paul had a thorn in the flesh. He prayed and prayed and prayed, Lord, please take this away from me. The Lord didn't take it away from him. Why?
Keep him humble.
I'm looking at you. He knows a lot more than he's saying. I can already tell you that.
I've said nothing, so.
Well, there I go.
I appreciate it.
I can see it in his eyes. Anybody else? Why was Paul not healed? And he finally says he has to live with that.
He's in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And the more we ask questions, the more we're confused, the more we're frustrated. We're going, God, why? God, why? And
it's not that you come to believe in God and you're following God and have a relationship and everything's perfect.
Right.
There's still going to be struggles. There's still going to be imperfections.
And Paul is showing us that even though my will's not being done, I've asked God, God's will still being done. Paul didn't go, well, if you're not going to heal this thorn in my flesh, then I'm out of here. He still worshiped God. He still was true to God. Even though he didn't get his way, he was going to, use this trial, this testing, this whatever it was, and live his life for God no matter what. The same with Job, when he says, no matter what happens, I'm going to I'm not going to curse God. I'm going to love God.
Well, even the leper says, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean.
Yeah.
So his acknowledging know is also an answer, but here I am and I believe, and if you will, I'd like to do it.
Yeah.
Please.
Everybody in this section said, you can if you want to. I know you can if you want to. That was basically what all of them said. Nobody said, heal me. They said, if you will.
And I know this seems hard to believe, but we've done four verses. That's how I knew we weren't going to get through eight today. Verse 5. And when he had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, entreating him. Now, where is Capernaum? Remember, guys? What does that city mean to you? Now, he's Jesus of Nazareth, but we talked about that.
Not far from Galilee.
Not far from Galilee.
That was more like his home base.
That's his home base. That's where he would go when he, you know, we're going to hear soon that he says, you know, foxes have holes and birds have nests, but I have nowhere to lay my head. That was where he went to lay his head. He didn't have a house there, but he would stay with Peter. He, you know, people would open their homes to him. That had become home base for him. So he's literally, when we see this, he's going back home. He's going back home for a rest. And it says, and when he entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, entreating him and saying, Lord, my servant is lying paralyzed at home, suffering great pain. And he said to him, I will come and heal him. Now, let me stop right there. Centurion. We've heard about those before. What's a centurion?
A leader of the 100.
Roman officer. A legion in the Roman army was 60,000. Men, 6,000 men. Oh gosh, I knew I should have wrote this down.
A 60th part.
Yeah. So, why didn't I write that down? Anyway, he is in charge of 100 men. He's a centurion. That's the century, whatever. So he's in charge of 100 men. Every time we read, this is really interesting, and I've never noticed this before. Every time the Bible speaks of a centurion, they're Gentiles, right? They're not Jews.
Right.
They're Roman occupiers. Mm-hmm. Every time, they're kind, humble men. Mm-hmm. Every time. One of the things about the centurion that I found really interesting is, I'm glad you're here today, Frank. He'll attest to this. He went through military history. Every time they went into battle, a Roman officer was not allowed to retreat. He could not retreat without orders from someone above him. So if he got into a bad place, and of course they're not sending, you know, tapping out stuff. I mean, they're, you know, somebody got to come and physically say, the general said to pull on back. They had to continue to fight. It wasn't an option. So they could not surrender. They could not fall back. They couldn't retreat. You've got to have a special kind of guy who's going to treat his men well, who's going to fight really heartily, who's going to stay calm in these types of situations where you can't really get out of. And this guy shows this because he's concerned about his slave. Now, what's a slave in this day and time? They're property, right? They're a hammer. You know, a hammer is something I use until it breaks, and then I throw it away. This guy's a tool. He's a hammer. And you could fix that hammer, maybe, or you can just throw it away and get you another hammer. Well, this guy's concerned about his slave. And so he comes to Jesus and says, you know, can you heal him? He says, but the centurion answered, and when Jesus says, I will come and heal him. The other thing you got to realize at this particular time is a Jew would not walk into a Gentile's home. That home is not worthy of a Jew. It's not really allowed. It's not breaking the law. It's not breaking God's law. So there's no law that says you can't do it. But you probably shouldn't eat there because it's not going to be kosher. You know, the cleanliness is not going to be the same as it is in a Jewish household. So for the most part, a Jew would not walk into a Gentile's house. And the centurion is obviously sensing this or knowing this. And so he says, you know, but the centurion answered and said, Lord, I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. For I too am a man under authority with soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my slave, do this, and he does it. Now, when Jesus heard this, he marveled and said to those who were following, truly I say to you, I have not found such faith with anyone in Israel. Remember, Israel is not a country. Israel has long since not been a country. They're a collective of people. They're a grouping together of of people that have the same race, that are from the same families and that type of thing. But they're no longer, they're now subject under the governance of Rome. So there is no one that's really Israel, but he's talking about that enclave of Jews that are that make up the Jewish religion right now. So he said, I have not found such great faith with anyone in Israel, and I say to you that many shall come from east and west. Wow, Gentiles, look around. You're them. You're the people he's talking about here, east and west, and recline at the table with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. Well, they just had a heart attack. Every rabbi, every priest, every scribe, every regular person goes, you're going to have a bunch of Gentiles sitting around the table in heaven with Abraham, Jacob, Isaac? That ain't happening. There's a belief in the Jewish religion that if you were just born a Jew, then you're going to heaven. You didn't really have to do anything. You're just going to go to heaven no matter what. And that Abraham stood at the gates of hell. And if somehow you lost your way and you started to walk that way, he'd go, whoa, 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 you're one of mine. Turn back around and go that way. So if you're a Gentile, you might go to hell. Probably are going to hell. But if you're Jewish, you're not. It's just you don't really have to do anything. You're not going to hell. You're going to heaven, and you're going to
saved by blood.
You're saved by blood. So you're going, and you're going to sit with Abraham at his bosom, and have this great feast that Jesus is talking about. But the sons of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness, and in that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. What's that place? Really? Can you say that in church? Can you say hell? I listened to a guy the other day, yesterday. You all right? Can I get you anything?
Yeah.
Okay. I listened to a sermon yesterday, and the guy said he went to some esteemed seminary, and he preached, and in one chapel service, it was a 45-minute chapel service, he preached 45 minutes on hell. And in the other chapel service, he preached 45 minutes on heaven. And at a different time, and the president of the university came up and said, we have never had anyone spend an entire chapel service on hell. And he said, how strange is that? Now, I dare say to you that probably most of y'all have not heard much about hell either. Some of you have, because we don't talk about it that much. And I'll say this for later, but there's a lot of different things. But right here, Jesus talks about into the outer darkness, in that place, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So he's talking about hell.
Kicking out, this has a reference to the marriage supper, I think, meeting with Abraham, the wedding feast, and being cast out of the wedding feast.
Right. The fact that faith was present in a Gentile caused Jesus to announce that there would be Gentiles in the kingdom of heaven, that they would even sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is a radical idea to many Jewish people of the day. He also is getting to the fact that in these few words he says something about what heaven is like. Heaven is a place of rest. We sit down in heaven. It is a place of good company to sit with. We enjoy the friendship of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in heaven. It's a place with many people. Jesus said that many will come into heaven. It's a place with people from all over the earth, from east and the west. It is a certain place. Jesus and many will come. When Jesus says it will happen, it will happen. Make sure. Okay. We're going to stop right there. Jesus talks more about heaven and more about hell than he does about heaven.
Wyatt was asking a bunch of questions this week. He opened up his little action Bible, the story of Job. He was asking me, well, why God let him do that? I'm like, okay, I gotta work on this one.
Look at the podcast. I don't know whether Job's still on our podcast.
it was a lot of weeks of it.
There's some morbid pictures of what poor Job went through. I'm like,
well, let's just start with, and to begin with, he lost his entire family. Boom. Now let's move on from there and have you sit in ashes for a while. But, you know, let's just go ahead and take away your family first.
Mom, what's hell exactly? And who's Satan? And which angel was he? And we're like Googling stuff and opening stuff up and going back, and he's trying to show me in his action Bible. And he's like, and what happened there?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Let me get
I like it.
Oh,
No. This is the only reason I know what I know is because I didn't know what I knew and I wanted to learn what I learned. So now you get to go and find all those answers.
Well, because my parents are still Catholic. And so we're like, well, some people believe this, and some people believe this. And they were reading something at school or something like that. And what about something turns into another life? Can you turn into, well, that would be Buddhist. That would be different. And then I was like trying to, that's not what we believe. Well, hey, what do we believe? Okay, hold on. Well, what do you know about that would work? Did you say, let's talk about where babies come from?
That's not bad.
Why is that very awkward?
Well, guys, unfortunately, we have had a great lesson, but I think we're at the end of our lesson for today. So we'll start next week. I will not be here next week. I will be here the week after. So we'll start on verse 14.
Yes, don't you?
Thank you.